You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is the 24th of February, 2021. If I'm a little depressed today, it might have something to do with the fact that I just spent $1,500 in property taxes. So, you know, if I fade in and out of coherence, you'll understand. Other than that, I want to thank all of my supporters, both financial and personal in every other way, for their assistance, not just from the financial point of view, of course, but also from a psychological point of view, that people are willing to give of themselves that way is really extraordinary. Especially in this day and age. So it means a lot that you can help essentially keep me independent, as I've said many times before, to allow me to lead the scholarly and academic life in an ascetic environment, needing very little, but doing this independent of a university or a think tank or a government or a church or anything else. The psychological angle is something that I've wanted to speak about for a long time. And it's from two different points of view. The first point of view is, what are our enemies like? How does their mind operate? And how do we understand them at that level? But the second is just as important. And that is, how are we to function emotionally, psychologically, living in this age, living in 2021, we're living under a regime that has made it vehemently clear, using very precise language, that they want to destroy us. And they will figure out some way to break us, get us in jail, to explode some frustration. And they have every resource imaginable, and we frankly have nothing. Those two things together are things, by the way, no one on our side has even brought up. The simple question as to how we're emotionally to deal with this every day. How do you function in society, knowing that the what we call the normies out there don't even speak the same language as we do? We're not even defining terms in the same way. Even basic communication now is something that's being challenged. We're not dealing with logical people. But that's exactly the topic. Over the last 10 years, I've become an involuntary expert on the psychology of narcissism. I lived with one for some time. Many of you are aware of the phenomenon. Now, the term narcissism is used on a daily basis, and as always with Americans, the term is abused, definitions are invented. Essentially what it comes down to is if someone doesn't like someone, they call them a narcissist. Now, I don't like psychology as a discipline very much. That used to be a part of philosophy. And then sometime in the 19th century, it split off and became part of the modernist world, taking sometimes very ancient arguments and understandings, restating them in a very simplistic way and giving them new, very pompous academic sounding names. That's essentially what they do. It's pretty rare that you can think of a single problem that psychology has solved. The DSM, their encyclopedia, changes every time a new one comes out, based on the political pressures of the day. We're familiar with the, you know, the definition of homosexuality and the transgender stuff. It's simply a matter of political pressure that changed these concepts and definitions, paraphilia and all the rest of it. So it's not a discipline I necessarily take very seriously, especially given the fact that the Orthodox Church Fathers, especially in the Greek-speaking world, mastered the discipline of what we would call today psychology. And it's hilarious to see these guys, you know, these pompous psychologists, talking like it's revelation about concepts of the human mind that someone like, you know, Maximus the Confessor had talked about in detail, you know, 1500 years ago. And of course, they're clueless as to that fact. The separation of modern intellectuals, especially Christians, from the Church Fathers is a schism that, you know, there is no cure for it. The perversion of Christianity, the perversion of the intellect, because they're separated from these men, intellectually and every other way, the disease of Protestantism, which has relegated these men to irrelevance. Men, you know, these Protestants who, honest to God, believe that the Bible fell from heaven, created paginated and neatly separated into books without any input from human beings, men. Now, of course, the church put the Bible together, and the church fathers put the Bible together, a very specific group of them. Narcissism is one of the most important concepts we can deal with today. I want to start off with something that I've dealt with many times. Of course, I'm a Platonist in the sense that Justin Martyr was a Platonist, that Maximus the Confessor was a Platonist. And one of the key elements there is the connection between the parts of the soul on the one hand and the nature of the state on the other. Put it in very simple terms, Plato divided the soul between the rational, what I guess we could call the spirited, and the passionate parts. The rational is based on logos, discerning the reason, whether it be of the forms or their dim manifestations on physical things. The spirited, or really the drive, almost an intellectual eros, the drive for knowledge and glory, which can be positive, can be negative, and then the passionate, or our lower drives associated with the brainstem, hunger, procreation, greed, desire for dominance. And they correspond with the state. The rational part of the soul corresponds with the so-called philosopher kings, the spirited with the guardian class, vaguely a dedicated, almost a Praetorian guard, and the passionate with the, what we would call the masses, or the laboring class. Now, none of those are value judgments, except in the sense that they deal with greater levels of universality. Plato was immensely valuable because the doctrine of the forms is the intellectual background for logos. Plato's forms are collected in the second person of the Trinity, in Christ himself, and these were used, they're created things. Though Plato may not have agreed with that. They're created things, the archetypes from which creation stems. And of course, the passions is, you know, what we suffer with, the nature of the fall. The human man has all three at war with him. And of course, the state has all three. Justice can only be understood through the rational part. That rational part is violently under attack by those who deny its very existence. Reason and logic are not the same thing. The passions are not bad things. They're only bad when the rational element fails to take control over it. The rational element and the spirited, or the kind of the drives in the best sense, the drives to be strong, to be virtuous, the engine of our actions, work together to control, to canalize the passions. Education, the tight control over culture, is how these things are brought together in a rational unity, whether it be in the state or the soul. What I'm saying is that that's a true understanding, and we can see that today, although in a very perverted way. I'm going to explain some of the basic traits of the narcissist, and again, I'm taking this from modern psychology, but it's certainly a lot older than that. Again, I'm not sure if psychology is aware of this, but it's much older than that. And when I do it, it's going to be very easy to see how the regime manifests these traits on a collective level. The point being is that what we're dealing with is narcissism writ large. And I'm telling you that unless you understand the nature of the narcissistic personality, you will never understand the regime or our enemies or how to deal with them. Number one, the narcissist has a very exaggerated sense of self-importance. They believe themselves superior in one way or another. Of course, you see that in the regime, by their belief that they are the true end of history, that liberalism needs to impose itself on the world with any kind of force necessary. And that's number two, this need for admiration, to have everyone bow the knee to them. And of course, we see that here. Unless you bow the knee to liberalism, you will be destroyed. They monopolize conversations. And if they're ignored or rejected, they feel angry and envious. Number three, the relationships are really based on exploitation. They're based entirely on surface attributes. They don't care about essences. They don't care about what human nature is. They don't care about true friendship and virtue. They care about how people can be used. And that, as far as the regime is concerned, is that's what capitalism is based on. Nominalism, the obsession with production and logic. Not reason, but logic. Number four, they have a marked sense of a lack of empathy. They are pathologically incapable of understanding the damage that they do to others, the emotional needs, the emotional condition of others. And again, as far as that relation to the regime, it almost doesn't need to be explained. From the English Revolution to the French Revolution to the Bolshevik Revolution to the revolution that we've been dealing with in this country for 40 years, killings and imprisonment and humiliation and destruction is their day-to-day life. Today, they're not even hiding that anymore. What people like me have been saying for 30 years and others for a lot longer than that now is fully admitted as true, and they're not shy about it. Number five, they have an unstable identity. They have this sense of self that on the one hand is very rigid. You know, they have these ideological obsessions that have to be imposed at all costs, really based on the fact that they're exceptional, that they have reached the purpose of history, and that's why they have a right to impose it and lie, easily threatened. But on the other hand, you see how that's applied is very inconsistent. Some of you may have seen the worship of the policeman allegedly killed at the so-called Capitol riot. The outpouring of the most exaggerated maudlin language. These are the exact same people that just a few months ago were talking about the physical destruction and liquidation of police in different cities. No one can do that without having a severe, severely unbalanced and disturbed psyche. There's no explanation for it otherwise. And we've all come across people who will say those two things to you, completely contradictory things, and not understand that it's a contradiction. Number six, the relationships are entirely based on shoring up their own sense of self-image. Everything is superficial. They don't care in any true sense of the term. The, you know, the notion of the of public policy is about smashing their enemies and building up their power base. Number seven, they have chronic feelings of emptiness. There is no ultimate purpose to what they do. Often it's destruction for destruction's sake. Now, we could say that the New World Order is based on lowering transaction costs, in destroying nations, in creating this mass of helpless individuals dominated by media, having no real source of identity, no reliable information, cut off from the spiritual world, etc., etc. But even if they were to get that, would they be happy then? Would the oligarchs who rule most of the planet today, if they got everything they wanted, would they be happy? Would they say, okay, we're done, you know, let's go and retire somewhere? No. We know that they would have to invent an enemy. I've used the example many times about the Kahal, the Jewish communal system in the Polish Empire, especially in the 17th, 18th century. The Jewish communal system, of course, had complete dominance in Poland. And they kept the poorer Jews in line, I mean, largely by complete separation from the Goyim, but by telling them that if they were able to, ever to convert, to leave the Kahal, to go, you know, become one of them, that they'd be killed, that the Goyim are drunken animals. And I could go through, I mean, letter after letter from rabbis, Talmudic rabbis at the time, saying this. This is not a secret. And it's how they kept people in line. And if they need to invent an enemy, they'll do it. One rabbi whose name isn't coming to me said, actually not too long ago, that if we didn't have the Gentiles, we'd end up killing each other. That's the narcissistic personality. And these things aren't just occasional traits. They're the deep underlying hardwiring of their personality. Now, that's not to say, by any means, that every single person that supports liberalism, in the broad sense of the term, is like this. Many of them are. Many of them are simply ignorant. Many of them are brainwashed. Many of them are frightened. Many of them, because we live in a regime of mass censorship, really don't know any better. Now, the connection between the psychological narcissistic state on the one hand and the ruling class on the other is pretty clear. Any trait of the narcissist which I've just explained is easily manifest in the ruling class. This is how they function. These people will talk about love and tolerance, and in the very same conversation will talk about destroying nationalism, destroying their enemies, humiliating white people, banning Christianity. They have no problem in saying this. Especially over the last year, they are more obnoxious about it than ever. Because the more power they get, the more arrogant they get. And the more insulated they are from reality. One of the things that the narcissistic personality does, and one of the ways you could really identify it, narcissistic personality, they're not sociopaths. They do have a conscience. That conscience, however, is deeply buried. They hate the fact that they have a conscience because they know and they're well aware that this stuff really isn't true. Or certainly not to the extent they believe it. That these are weapons. This is destruction. This is about their own mental state and not the nature of reality. They know this. Exposing them, defeating them in debate, you know, putting out articles and books showing how absurd they are, is the worst thing you can possibly do. Because it continually reminds them what they really are. The narcissist knows that he's not extraordinary. He knows that he's not worthy of admiration. In fact, just the opposite. So what do they do? Both in the political and in the individual level, they surround themselves with yes men. Weak personalities that tell them what they want to hear. People who disagree. People who point out what they really are. They have numerous tactics, we'll get to that in a minute, as to how they eliminate them from their lives. You know, some form of, we use the term flying monkey. A flying monkey is somebody who is kind of ignorant about the nature of the narcissist who's then used to humiliate and marginalize those who identify the narcissist for what they really are. This happens all the time. The flying monkey is usually an unknowing foot soldier. And that's the person that we're coming across, whether it be in verbal or, you know, social media debate. And so many of them are really unaware of the situation that they're in. You know, most people are extremely ignorant. You know, I spent decades, you know, in grad school, as a professor, going over the most profound, the most extraordinarily powerful arguments, whether it be history or metaphysics, getting into every detail from Plato to Hegel, to Nietzsche, to you know, the Russian nationalist, all this, only to learn that when you go out into even the educated world, you're dealing with ignoramuses. People who have no idea that there's anything in the world other than their passions and drives. People who have constructed their own world from their own projections. It is institutionalized neurosis. And that's the nature of postmodernity. That's the world that we are forced to live in. Logic, reason, the basic structure of cognition is gone. Very rarely do you come across it anymore. That's the situation that we find ourselves in. You're going to cut people off from the spiritual realm, from Plato's realm of the forms, from Logos, from the church, whatever it is. You have to destroy that part of the brain, or I should say the mind. This has nothing to do with the brain. The mind, which is not a physical thing, that connects to the spiritual realm. The logoi, the forms, the archetypes with which we understand the world objectively have to be denied and destroyed. And of course, those who accept them have to be denied and destroyed too. The so-called scientific method, to the extent it had any validity at all, is absolutely rejected. The paradigms imposed on students in scientific grad programs are extremely rigid, ideological, and ascientific. It is ideology. It is not science. It has nothing to do with empiricism. Again, they'll read someone like, you know, Thomas Kuhn, and they'll talk about the nature of coercion here, and still turn around and talk about the sacredness of the scientific method, not seeing a contradiction. yes, it's possible that some of these people are neurotic because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. Or, on the other hand, it's possible that they don't recognize cognitive dissonance, either because they're sociopaths, or they simply don't have the mental capacity. Do not assume that everyone you come across is capable of reason. And if they're not capable of reason, they're just capable of logic. Of course, you know, my cat is capable of logic. It knows how to hunt a mouse. That doesn't mean it's intelligent. It might be devious. But that's not what I mean. Reason is something different. You know, if I want to go get a drink of water, logic tells me what to do to get there. That's not reason. Reason explains why that's important and how that connects with everything else in the world. That's a totally different thing. Logic is a tool. Reason is the nature of reality. It's the central, it's logos. So you're dealing with people, you know, cognitive dissonance is something that, for example, in the times when I was younger, and I actually suffered with it, is an awful, awful thing. You can't function. You either have to destroy it, you know, eliminate it, as I did, as best as we can, or somehow internalize it. And if you internalize it, you will become intensely neurotic. I've been at this nonstop for last month is 31 years. And I've spent every day of my life debating somebody, whether it be, especially now with you know, social media, or in person, which I'm starting to really, I don't like the idea of in-person debates. We'll get to that in a minute. Social media, writing, essays, that kind of thing. It's been pretty much nonstop. If you guys get a minute, well, I'm going to talk about this maybe some other time, but go through the list of logical fallacies, especially the informal ones. That's key to understand really the next topic here, which is coming across these people in day-to-day life. We have no choice. There are people out there who, either because they're in, you know, bad faith, because they're brainwashed, because they're irrational, you're going to have to deal with them. And I'm really the ideal situation here. We're talking about someone who you really don't know, who you're debating on social media. Now, the content of the debate is a separate issue, because you guys have to know, I mean, don't mess with someone unless you really know your stuff. Don't mess with someone before you understand what makes them tick. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But so often our enemies, especially today, because they have everything, you know, they never even come across their opposition. You'll see a few similarities. And in my 30 years, this has been painfully obvious. Even if you point this stuff out, even if they tend to agree with you, you'll come across the same person a year later saying the same thing. Don't assume that people are rational. Don't assume that people care about the truth of the matter. It's a mistake that I made for a long time. Don't assume that people are like you. Don't assume that they're scrupulous, rational, that they care about truth, or will ever fight fair. Generally speaking, it isn't going to happen. As the education system collapses, as reason itself is denied, power is the only thing left. Liberal ideology is violently imposed in every classroom, every publishing house, every website, every media organization, every church. The people who we're dealing with are getting stupider. They're getting more arrogant. They're getting more ignorant. But there are a few things you may find that they have in common. And you need to know this stuff going in, or the way you deal with them is going to fail miserably. The first thing that you'll notice is they tend to argue in bad faith. they generally don't care about or even try to understand what you have to say. Sometimes they don't understand the language that you're using. You know, for years I've been talking about how the word democracy has been totally redefined. It's not a procedure for electing leaders. It's liberal ideology. You know, I was removed from Facebook, numerous other removed from jobs. I was called officially a threat to democracy, which is one of the great achievements of my life. It's on my CV. It's really one of my titles. But, I mean, I'm opposed to the, you know, general election of the executive in general, certainly in the sense that modern liberals understand it. But, of course, certainly even more than that, I'm opposed to liberal ideology for a whole bunch of reasons. And I've spent the last 30 years explaining that in great detail. But bad faith is the first thing you have to assume. They are dedicated, it seems, to almost deliberately misunderstanding and mischaracterizing what you're about to the point of absurdity, to the point of absolute destruction. And again, I'm increasingly convinced that they are dedicated to destruction for destruction's sake. You know, when you ask them what they're building, they rarely have a rational answer. They won't give you anything else to talk about, you know, whether it be individualism. They'll talk about equality. You know, but these are very vague, abstract terms that can mean anything. And if you begin asking them what these terms mean, you will find yourself in this very same situation. The people who we're dealing with often are just not equipped to have mature discussions. And they certainly have no idea how to resolve conflicts. Because the concept of expertise has gone out the window, and even those in the academy are so dominated by leftist ideology, the terms and the concepts and the arguments are always changing. But even they're flying monkeys. They'll use terms, they'll use arguments, they'll talk about methods, you know, the scientific technique and all this other stuff. Yeah, they've kind of heard about these things, but they don't understand them. And they're convinced that they're being reasonable and fully logical. When you begin, and if you do this properly, and you begin calmly taking apart their ideology, they will become extremely upset and aggressive. And what they'll do is they'll deflect. You then become irrational, unreasonable, whatever it is. The concept of education in America in 2021, to be educated is to be liberal. These are some of the same people that will talk about how awful it is to characterize people in terms of groups, and then talk about black power and Jewish interests, and how much they hate the rednecks. Again, having no clear concept that that's a contradiction. Either they don't believe it in the first place, which is often the case, or they don't have the capacity to understand it. You're discussing these things on social media. Remember, the person who you're arguing with, they're not really your concern. If nothing, they're nothing more than a pretext. You lay out the argument as calmly and as dispassionately as you possibly can, understanding that other people are going to be reading this. I don't like verbal debates very much, because when someone gives you an argument, a verbal debate, you'll be expected to immediately respond. Well, that's irrational. Someone gives me an argument worthwhile, I want to think about it. I want to go to my sources. I want to go to their sources. Now, that's pretty rare you get an argument like that. But that's the ideal situation. You can't immediately formulate something in a split second. What it ends up being is whoever has the best one-liner and the best quip who makes the audience laugh. And of course, I tend to be able to do this, but that doesn't convert anybody. Or the people who will convert, we don't want. They're unable. They're really unwilling to have a mature conversation. And in fact, they're not even sure why such a conversation exists, because it's so obvious that they should be in the dominant group. Sometimes you'll see what amounts to an incoherent, amalgamation of, fallacies, of misrepresentations, of errors, and often very emotional kind of verbiage. Narcissists are known for this. It's called word salad, which is, sometimes you'll hear a speech from one of these people where they throw 10 accusations, all in like a few sentences, all in the most ridiculous emotional reasoning, having no conception of even the language that they're using. The purpose isn't to give a logical argument. The purpose is to wear you down. The purpose is to confuse you and to make you seem ridiculous. And really, it comes down to, especially in 2021, the use of provocations and bullying. Again, bully is one of these words that has been completely redefined, manipulated, but it certainly does exist. The regime and those it dominates have all the power and all the money. Those who oppose it are bullied just by our very existence. You can't bully an equal. Some of the worst things that you can do to these, it's like awakening a sleepwalker. Exposing their absurdity, it's probably best to not be in their physical presence. If you're dealing with a schizophrenic and you kind of tear apart their make-believe reality, you better get out of the way. You burst their bubble, and you do it with a great degree of skill. You may well be in dangerous territory. Maybe 80% of the discussions you're going to be in, you're going to deal with name-calling, emotional language, attempts to deliberately hurt you, to lie, to make up stories. And of course, behind it all is the idea of physical aggression in prison. The situation with Donald Trump, how the press, how the media dealt with him, really changed everything. There is nobody in American history that's treated the way he was. I did shows some time ago where I listed the completely made up, invented stories that CNN and, all these, silly CSNBC and all these, the oligarch, handful of oligarch media companies created and threw with Donald Trump. They're invented. They have no factual foundation. My Patreon page and other things, I have lists and lists of all of these things. And sometimes they're fully, they're aware of this. In the George Zimmerman case, if you remember, where CNN deliberately spliced his words to have him say something that he didn't say. And yet today, even in university textbooks that cover this in sociology, they'll use the spliced and make-believe language. Because they may have admitted, CNN did admit, to inventing his using technology to splice his words and to change everything. They admitted it. Someone was symbolically fired. But that was quickly forgotten. You need to remember that the American mass has a very short memory. And it's not crazy to say that as they're eulogizing the policeman harmed in what happened in the Capitol, they really may just not remember that they were calling for the deaths of policemen back in July and August. Not just their deaths, but the funding of their department. That has almost completely been forgotten. And you even have calls for beefing up police departments so long as they're used against us. The blatant, well, I mean, they certainly forget when I first got started in this in the early 90s, fighting so-called conservative censorship was the big liberal agenda. Of course, we never had any kind of power to censor anybody. But the very idea that pornography should be tightly banned, controlled, and smashed, was considered terrible censorship, as if James Madison wrote the First Amendment to protect, a scumbag who just died, Larry Flint. That's what they were concerned with. What they want to ban is exactly what people like James Madison wanted to protect. Debates over science and politics and philosophy. Debates that now are banned and illegal in many parts of the world. Scientific journals will not publish anything that, for example, supports any kind of creationism. Doesn't matter how good it is, it opposes the agenda, and now that's normal. That's policy. Many of you know that my big accusation, and one of the things we have to keep in mind when dealing with these people, is the constant use of lying and especially changing definitions. We talk about, for example, what happened over the summer. They'll say it never happened, that these protests were peaceful, that no one was armed, that no policemen were hurt or killed, that there's no massive increase. I think the murder rate in America's cities has gone up over 200% in some places just last summer. They'll deny it. They'll say it didn't happen, that we're making it up, and that we should be put in prison. The line between denial and delusion is very thin. And in doing that, especially with the media behind them, the banking establishment behind them, the universities behind them, and the threats of physical violence, and even jail, and losing your job, that constant hammering ultimately leads to us, some of our people, being starting to deny themselves, denying their own experiences. Maybe I didn't see that stuff over the summer. Maybe, and then, you know, they're confused, their morale collapses, and they become almost a hypnotic wreck. And the technical term for that, some of you have heard of it, is gaslighting. The idea of gaslighting is, it also has to do with moonlight. That the light that comes from the moon, that comes from the old gas-powered streetlights. You see this actually in Dostoevsky and Gogol, in Nevsky Prospect and their stuff in St. Petersburg. They talk about how the lanterns alter people's appearances. They hold the notion of the lunar, the light that reflected from the moon, completely is almost hypnotic. You don't see the way that the light reflects on people and objects makes them look totally different in the moonlight than they would in the sunlight. That's become a trope in literature, especially in Russian literature. Gaslighting refers to the older artificial lamps casting a very strange kind of glow onto people that make them look different. Moonlight is very much that way. It's the difference between moonlight and sunlight. The sun is the same. It's powerful. It's direct. The moon is always changing. The moon is deceptive. The moon is really on. It's not even, it's like half light. It's not, you know, it doesn't flood the planet like the sun does. It's very incomplete, and so it's easy to be fooled. That's the nature of, I mean, the gaslighting is really almost a summary of what we're dealing with every day. I've already come across people denying that policemen were killed this summer, or that people were advocating the slaughter of policemen and white people, that blacks who have killed white people have gone and, you know, we've come, it's been censored online, but we certainly have cases where they have either had very light prison sentences or no prison sentence at all. Again, it's delusion. They'll redefine terms and ideas to suit their story. They'll use euphemisms. They'll redefine words, especially commonly used words, to fit their story when it normally wouldn't. All they care about is justifying the regime, their own actions, and what they're saying, and largely because what they're saying is done through force. We're not entirely sure to what extent they really believe this nonsense, or whether they have to believe this nonsense. And if they have to believe this nonsense, how long does it take before they begin to actually really believe it? Thus, through repetition, and because of censorship, they're not really seeing the opposing side. So many of our people are so incompetent, and they're so presumptuous, they try to argue something they're not in any position to argue, that they make us look bad. Please, pick your battles. If you're going to go to war, and intellectual war, please have it be something that you know about, an area that you really worked on, something that you could do a lot of good. You have to have a goal. Here's what I'm trying to do. And my God, please. And I know, and I've failed in this respect 100 times. And it's something that a lot of us have to work on. Do not get sucked in to their word salad and get angry. Or depressed, or whatever it is. It's very difficult to stick to the point when you're dealing with people who really have no idea with what sticking to the point is or why anyone should care. We're living in an age of mass official censorship. Therefore, you have more and more people who literally don't know that there's another side. And you see sometimes they look at you like you have a head growing out of your neck. You know, when you mention something. It's that sometimes, again, you're using words that they're not even familiar with. What we know as liberalism and leftism, they think is just how everything is. Another method that you're going to see is what we call deflecting, or deflection and projection. These are defense mechanisms. They're usually, they come from Freud. They're pretty simple. Again, there's really nothing in psychology that's all that deep. It really isn't. It was when it was a part of philosophy. It certainly was. That's why you get a PhD in psychology. It's still a doctor of philosophy. But because they're nominalists and they use, statistical methods and all that, it doesn't get very deep. You don't get any deep knowledge through statistics and through quantity. But still, they're useful ideas. To deflect is to have some vague realization that what they're doing is wrong. And rather than deal with their problem, they then turn it around and say, you're doing this exact same thing. They'll never take responsibility for their behavior. And that exists at the state level, and that exists at the individual level. As far as the state is concerned, state policies over the last 40 years have destroyed the family, have destroyed religion, have destroyed manufacturing, have destroyed unions. And the very people who constructed these policies will never repent. They'll never realize what they did. Rather than do that and suffer the consequences, they will lie, they'll tell stories, but most importantly, they'll accuse you of doing the exact same thing. People who've defended the oligarchs, the Jewish oligarchs who have ruled Ukraine, for example, and Russia in the 1990s to the point of mass poverty, they defended those people, they financed those people. They'll turn around and talk about how someone like Putin is backed by the oligarchs. All they're doing is deflecting. Projection is when they take their own toxic behaviors and vices and act as if and assume that we have those very same vices. Because they're dishonest, because they lie on a regular basis, they assume that we do too. We are not equals. We're forced to be. by the nature of the system. But we're not. We don't do what they do. You bring up something that's, you know, false or a lie or a double standard. A rational person will address the issue. They'll take responsibility for it. They'll change their point of view. But I've done this many times. No, the irrational, immature, the soy boys, we call them, they'll go into attack mode. They'll deflect. They don't know how to look at themselves. Just like you can't assume that people care about truth. You can't assume that people are rational. You also can't assume that people know how to be introspective. They don't know how to look at themselves. Looking at yourself objectively is difficult. It's actually very painful. But since people will do anything, generally speaking, to avoid discomfort, although that's very simplistic too, they'll avoid introspection. A lot of these people, really, they can't be alone with themselves. Their conscience is so twisted, but it's still there. You know, the whole notion of the judgment in the Orthodox faith, the notion of the judgment is not so much that God has this list of laws, like a judge, and he, you know, pronounces sentence. That's a metaphor. God knows what's happening. There's no judgment. You don't use the metaphor of a modern court. God forbid. No, you're the one that does the judging. The difference in the next life is that you can't lie. Because God knows all, you can't tell a story, whether to yourself or to anyone else. Here you have a good lawyer to manipulate the jury. You can't do that in the judgment. The only thing that's judged is your own conscience, and you do the judging. You won't be allowed to tell stories. You won't be allowed to deflect, to project. You won't be allowed to threaten, to throw people in prison, to attack them, to send your goons after them. You won't be allowed to do that. You'll be forced to do what they refused. Many of us refuse to do here on earth. Look at yourself. Everything is open. There's no veil anymore. There's no self-justification. There's no, you know, you can't turn the TV up to avoid dealing with things. You can't do that in the judgment. You are judged by yourself. Your conscience finally is laid bare. Your conscience is finally able to operate with no hindrance. That's what the judgment is. There's no more bad faith. You can't lie anymore. Lying is, of course, institutionalized, but overwhelmingly, people lie to themselves. So many, especially in the situation that we're talking about, they're lying, but they're not aware that they're lying. It's because they spend so much time lying to themselves that they've come to believe these things is true. This is some of the basic foundations of neurosis. Things that psychology has no, I mean, they're not in any, they simply are, because they're part of the regime, they're institutionalized, they can't talk about this stuff. So many of these guys, I can picture these professors of psychology reading about a narcissist, having no idea that they're talking about them. These pompous idiots talking about Plato, or Gogol, God forbid. My favorite writer, the greatest Russian writer, in my opinion, having no idea that they're the ones that are being excoriated in these words. They simply don't have the capacity to look at themselves. They can't. You kind of wonder why people, particularly your friends, people you know, why they attack you, why they make fun of you, why they reject you, no matter how rational you are. No matter how little they know, why the rejection? Especially in such vehement terms. And something like the Holocaust. Why that in particular? Why that? Of all the alleged crimes that you can deny, why is that, you know, met with such vehement derision and not anything else? Well, we all know the reason, of course. The reason is, if they accept reason and evidence. They actually acted like the scientific method they pretend to believe in. Their life, as they know it, would be over. Because once you come to the knowledge of truth, you're now in trouble. You'll end up like Socrates, like Christ, like the prophets, like so many of the new martyrs. Because once you know the truth, now there's no excuse. You can't hide it. I understand that a lot of our people have no choice but to lay low for a while. That's understood, so long as they support people who aren't lying low. Sorry, laying low. I can't speak English. It's okay to not be able to do anything right now, so long as you support those of us who are. We understand that. And however that's going to work out psychologically later, that's a whole separate issue. But I understand that. And no one should be condemned for not being able to be, you know, out in front and, you know, marching to your neighbor's house, calling them frauds. We understand that that's often not possible. But you then have the responsibility of supporting those who actually do that. Which is, by the way, exactly what the prophets did in the Old Testament. There's a reason why the Old Testament is increasingly ignored. And one day, I made this prediction, I'm going to keep doing it. It will be banned. It will be removed from the Bible. They'll talk about, you know, racism and everything else. They'll have like 3 or 4 Psalms and like 10 Proverbs, and that'll be all that's left. That's going to be gone. I guarantee it. It's going to, because it's, no one understands it anyway. No one talks about it. No one gets it. It's so violent and nationalist and socialist in the true sense. Everything that the regime is against, there is no way. And it's simply ignored. You know, these pseudo-intellectual Christians going around, like, ask them about what Leviticus is about. Don't talk to me about the Bible until you actually understand it. Not just a few of the, what you think are easy to understand slogans from the Gospels. Explain to me what the symbolic, what does the number 2 mean? Is it 2 of something? And in their ignorance, they really believe that. They think number 2 is 2 of something. I have 1 thing, I have 2 things. That's what number 2 is. And it's so difficult to keep from just pummeling the person, hoping maybe that will, you know, bring them to some coherence. We can't do that. We can't do that. We can't do what Elijah did. But rather, we could do something far worse. The worst thing we can do, as far as they're concerned, is to be calm and cool, ignore their provocations, and lay out in detail why they're wrong. Then they have a choice to make. Once they realize that they can't get you anymore, and what they do, I don't know. You know, they threaten you, who knows? But once they can't go any further, once they simply lose, and it's key that you remain calm, just let the crap flow over you. You know what they're going to say, and you know why they're saying it. The worst thing you can do is stay calm and take apart their assumptions. Burst the bubble. And the reason that's the worst thing you can do, opposed to just, you know, making them look foolish, although never humiliate them. Never humiliate. If you know more than somebody else, do not rub it in. That is a disaster. That is no way to function. You want to convert some of these people. No, it's the worst thing you can do, because they then have to make a choice. Either I'm going to lie and pretend I didn't hear this stuff, or I'm going to have to completely remake my life. The minute you start talking like I do, there's no way you could have a normal job. You can't have normal friends. You can't go to cocktail parties and act like everything is fine. You now have an obligation in one way or another to tell the truth, knowing full well what's going to happen to you. That's just how it is. Now, again, assuming they're not sociopaths, and there's millions of sociopaths out there, A sociopath has no conception. There's no good or evil. There's no truth or falsehood. There's no beauty or ugly. It's all one mass. It's a mass of gray. They're miserable people. They're actors and manipulators, but they're miserable people. There's no good, there's no bad, there's no happiness, there's no sadness. They simply exist. Assuming they're not that, they're going to have to live in utter misery because they know the truth and they're not going to be able to talk about it. Or, of course, they withdraw themselves from society as much as humanly possible and change their lives. Well, they're not going to do that. So they'll lie to themselves, they'll attack you, they'll call you names, they'll do whatever they can, and it comes ultimately from, as I said early on, bad faith. The regime depends on irrationality, it depends on lying, it depends on neurosis, deflection, projection. It is institutionalized narcissism. It's narcissism writ large. Anyway, this is serves as kind of an introduction to this topic. It is absolutely essential we deal with this. Next time, I want to talk about how we're to function as human beings in this toxic, sick system. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.